This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Guess who's back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back.
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, the most underrated environment in the SEC. Plus, I'll give you some sleepers for college football. We do it every year. I'll pick a sleeper from each conference in college football this year. And since I'm a broadcasting nerd, I'm curious. If and when Tom Brady steps into that booth, will he immediately become the best analyst we have in the NFL? If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. And the podcasts are always available online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just head over there and click on our show page. You can also leave a comment for the show there on our show page. Get in touch with the show online over on Twitter at Morrow Middays. You can always text the show 843-608-1734. And you can always join the conversation on the phones as well, 843-721-9500. Hey, big night for my New York Rangers. Keeping that series alive.
They're trying, Luke, and now that Sidney Crosby's down with an injury, yes, potentially not going to be there for Game 6. I'm a little nervy, Luke. I'm getting a little nervy if the greatest hockey player of my generation is not on the ice for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
This became a big topic. People thought it was a dirty hit.
Yeah, oh, it was. That man should be suspended for the rest of the playoffs, that Rangers player.
You know, I always liked the idea. I don't know if it was dirty or not. I have no idea. But I always liked the idea. Like, we talked about it a lot with the Warriors and the Grizzlies. I know the NHL was talking about it. I don't know if they ever implemented the rule. But if you cause an injury on what is believed to be a dirty hit, you should be suspended for as long as that player's out with the injury.
Whoa.
Almost like an eye for an eye, right? If you injure somebody from a dirty play and that player misses, say, a month, well, then guess what? You're out for a month because you just took away that other team's player for a month. So now you're out for a month, too. I always like that idea for all sports. Draymond Green delivers a dirty blow that takes a player out for the rest of the series. Sorry, you're out for the rest of the series. Don't be a dirty player. Now, that's not the case, but, yeah, Sidney Crosby got banged up last night. I saw everybody freaking out online over it. Big news. So now hopefully the Rangers can finish this thing off. Now, so how does it work? Let's say this. If both of our teams lose in the first round, but the Oilers lose in fewer games, I still lose the bet, right?
I do. I think that would be the bet, yes.
Okay. All right. I don't think the Rangers come all the way back, but they are making things a little intriguing.
Yeah, they are. All those suits and khakis out in the stands for the Rangers games. I guess they made some noise last night. it's tough, Luke. They don't have a true fan base. I don't know. I've turned on the Rangers for some reason. I have no reason why, but like, yeah, I'm just a casual hockey fan, but I'm not a fan of the Rangers and their fans right now.
See, so that was the tough thing. By the way, the Oilers play tonight at 10 p.m. This is their season. They lose tonight, they're done, and they're on the road. So a huge game tonight on TBS. Everybody will be watching, I'm sure, for my Edmonton Oilers. But this was the thing, you know, we grew up in Connecticut. We grew up Hartford Whalers fans. We had season tickets. It was the only team we had around. And I remember going to the games. We used to have to rotate, my brothers and I, because I think we only had two tickets, right? So you'd go like every third game. And we wouldn't go to all the games. My dad would give them out and stuff, but you get the idea. So that was tough. When the Whalers left, though, it was like, okay, now who do we root for? Because for years, we were rivals with the Bruins, with the Rangers. We hate all those fans. They'd come into our building and be obnoxious. So you couldn't root for a local team. So it kind of just ruined hockey for the Morrow family and really for a lot of people in Connecticut. But as you were saying, your distaste of the Rangers fans, I understand. Because for years, the Whalers were rivals of all these teams, and the Whalers left. It's like, oh, I can't root for any of these teams. I hate these fans.
The Rangers, it's all suits when you're watching those games, Luke. I mean, they probably have a couple true fans, I'm sure, you know, the New York blood. But let's be honest. I mean, it's people taking clients out, you know, after, you know, the 9-to-5. Come on.
Well, we'll see what happens in that series. And again, to remind you, the loser of the bet will get pied in the face. That's what we decided on. I have the Edmonton Oilers. Trent has the Penguins. And whichever team gets knocked out sooner, not necessarily first, but earlier, earliest in the playoff field, that person loses the bet, has to get pied. Speaking of which, there was a big issue yesterday with pies. We got a pie delivered here to the Morrow Midday Show. It was very kind. It was the millionaire pie that we were talking about on the show last week. I thought it was delicious. Thank you to Jim and Kathy for delivering it, for making it, for baking it at home and bringing it in. Appreciate it. It was good. And I guess Bobby was so upset.
He was.
He spent all afternoon complaining that he didn't get any of this pie.
Yeah, I mean, he was starting to talk about it. He said this is Pie Gate. You know, this is a big, big deal up there with Deflate Gate and Watergate, things of that nature. You know, he was really upset. And so, you know, I had to call in a couple favors and get the guy a pie because I felt so bad. I mean, it was every coming back from break, Luke. It was a pie. Pie conversations were happening.
Don't reward this attitude of just complaining for 3 hours so he could get his own personal pie. Get that out of here. That's what I used to do as a kid, and it still wouldn't work at my parents back then. Bobby's getting a pie delivered.
Oh yeah.
Did he eat the pie? What have we heard from the pie?
I don't know if he's dove into his pie yet. But we'll have to see. You know, I hope he does, because a lot of trouble happened to get that pie to Bobby. So I really hope he does, because I went through, you know, I was jumping through hoops, Luke, while I'm trying to produce this program.
I love it. You get a pie delivered, and it wasn't that he was here in studio. He was out in location. He was out at the car dealership?
Yeah, Crew Chevy.
They had to bring a pie out to him. I love it. Right, as they say, the noisy wheel gets the oil, whatever it is. Squeaky wheel gets the oil. Which reminds me, I told the story on Tuesday when I got back into town about how we had the bananas delivered to one of my friend's house.
Oh, yeah.
So one of the buddies that was with me on the trip over the weekend, he told the story to his family, and it wound up getting back to his grandmother. And she was so blown. She did not understand, like, how can you be over there in another state and somehow get bananas to this guy's house at his doorstep? How did you deliver these bananas? She was so blown away that you could do this online, have food, groceries, really anything nowadays, delivered to not even your home, but someone else's home. And in this case, to have a pie delivered to a car dealership. Now, Bobby, look, I'm sorry, right? He's I don't know if Bobby is hip with the Amazon Prime and whatnot and DoorDash. Mm. He must have had his mind blown that a pie shows up for him at a car dealership yesterday.
Oh, no doubt. It happened during the show. We were live, and the great DoorDasher that was doing the delivery and just said, hey, this is a pie from your producer, and then walked away. And I was like, that was the perfect interaction right there. That's beautiful. That's absolutely beautiful.
What do you think when you get that delivery? I don't know. I mean, it's money regardless, right? But you got to go pick up a pie and bring it to a car dealership. And then when you get there, you find out the person you're bringing it to is on the radio, too. It's not just like a random guy working at the car dealership wanting a pie. He's sitting there, and he doesn't even know the pie was coming. That's a great delivery, though, and message.
Oh,
it
yeah.
reminded me of two weeks ago, that actress that got served. She had her paper served to her while she was on stage at the award show. Olivia Wilde, I think it was, from Jason Sudeikis. That was an awkward exchange as well. She's standing up like presenting at some like award show or some movie convention, and she got papers served about their, I think it was over the child support. Very awkward. This was certainly less awkward, but I love that idea of just dropping off a pie with that message to Bobby at Cruz. So I hope, Bobby, you enjoyed the pie. Your 3 hours of complaining got you the treat. Hey, Tom Brady, the big news this week is that Tom Brady is going to eventually be part of the broadcast booth in the NFL whenever he retires. Now, I don't know if this speeds up the retirement. I said earlier this week, right, if you have a plan B, you don't have a plan A, maybe Brady is looking at something, maybe it's a year from now. Maybe he's already getting his ducks in order for his eventual retire in the near future after he thought it was already coming down this offseason. But here was Dan Graziano was on ESPN. Talking about how just because we got this announcement, right, everybody assumes like, oh, this is Brady's last year. Maybe that's not a safe assumption. Here was Graziano on Brady.
Have we not learned not to assume such things about Tom Brady? No, no, no. Look, the announcement made it clear. This is a deal that starts whenever he decides he's done playing football. That does not have to be next offseason. Tom Brady has a contract with the Buccaneers that voids after this year. He could be playing somewhere else in 2023. He could go back to Tampa in 2023. He could go to the broadcast booth. It'll depend on how he feels at the end of the year and what he still feels like he wants to accomplish. But now this will be waiting for him. And no, I don't think it has. I don't think it's any indication that he's almost
done. You keep saying that.
Yeah, and rightfully so. We keep saying that because you can never count out Brady. I would not be surprised if he played beyond this upcoming year. But I was also surprised that this news came out now. I would not think Brady would be a guy that would do something like this while he is still playing. I would think he'd be all in on his playing career. And then when the time came, he would make that transition and keep the two things separate. So I am a little surprised that this news came out that at least has Brady thinking about his future after football, at least after his playing days. But I don't know if that future will begin in the next 12 months. Maybe it depends on how this next season goes. Remember, when he lost this past year, I said, this is not going to be it for Brady. Even when he announced his retirement, well, not really. Schefter announced the retirement, and then Brady put out a post that never said the word retiring. And I never bought into it. And I said here on the show, until he's not playing week one, I don't buy it. And he came back 40 days later. If you're Tom Brady, I don't think you lose. You go out like that, that loss where he almost pulled off a great comeback. They lose to the Rams at home. I don't think that's how you go out if you're a Tom Brady. So it may depend on how this season goes, whether he then steps into the booth and makes even more money, or if he wants to come back and play. But he's got that drive. In fact, Brady said something interesting in, I think it was that docuseries that was going on ESPN, where he almost talked about his football career as if it was like an addiction. And I'm paraphrasing, but he said something along the lines that he hopes his kids don't have that same feeling, where he almost feels like he can't step away from football. That competitive drive keeps pulling him back to the point where now, he's 45 still playing. And not only that, but the time that he puts into it, where you figure, like, you're already the greatest of all time. How much more can you actually learn? Right? You know the position so well. You know your offense. You really need to work as hard as you do. Even if you have a bit of a down year, we're not going to hold it against you. You're 45. You're breaking all these records. But the fact that he can't ease up at all, like, it's a 24/7 thing. His mind's always on football. He's always working. And I know that when I was, not to try to compare myself to Tom Brady, but when I was working in minor league baseball and I was in charge of social media, and that's always like unfortunately, a 24/7 thing. You always have to be on top of everything. And my boss would even, was aware enough to acknowledge it and would even, come up with the idea of like, to give you a break, work from home one day or something, because it sounds so silly. Like, it's social media, who cares? But it's one of those things you can never turn your mind off. You always have to be paying attention to what's going on. For those that don't live in the social media world may not fully grasp it. But you always have to be quick with a response or with the latest phase in social media, the trend of the day, and you have to stay relevant as a team trying to get attention on the internet, and it's a 24/7 thing. And it seems like for Brady, it's the same idea with football, where like he can't shut his mind off or slow it down or just take a day off and like kick your feet up and relax. It's an addiction to him. That until he retires, like he's got to go, 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 always be working at his craft. Otherwise, he feels like either he's falling behind or he's not getting the job done or maybe doesn't feel accomplished. And it was interesting to hear him talk about it in this documentary where it was almost like a blessing and a curse. It's helped him become this good, but at the same time, like, he can't just turn off that switch. He's almost like a hostage to the game, which in the end, he probably doesn't truly mind. But he did say something like, I hope my kids don't have this same thing. I hope they're able to like just enjoy some downtime and not be so consumed by whatever their passion is at all hours of the day. But here's my question, because I'm a broadcasting nerd. I love this stuff. I could talk about these booths all day. We're going to have 5 number one broadcast booths in the NFL once Brady enters. You're going to have Tom Brady and Kevin Burkhardt at Fox. You're going to have Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit on Amazon doing Thursday Night Football. You're going to have Buck and Aikman now doing Monday Night Football on ESPN. Sunday Night Football will be Tirico and Chris Collinsworth. And then you still have Nance Romo, number one booth on CBS. Trent, if I were to ask you, of those 5, how are you power? Now, we don't know. Brady may be terrible. We don't know. He may be the greatest thing ever. But as somebody who watches a lot of football, also, by the way, we haven't seen Kirk Herbstreit or Al Michaels together yet either. But of those 5, who appeals to you the most? Brady Burkhardt, Al Michaels, Kirk Herbstreit, Buck and Aikman, which we've had for so long, Tirico Collinsworth, or Nance Romo? Which one of those booths do you think you may like the most?
I always have loved Joe Buck and Troy Aikman. I think yes. That's my favorite booth in the NFL. Joe Buck lets the TV speak when it needs to speak, and Troy Aikman, does a great job breaking it down. I love Al Michaels. He's been one of my favorite broadcasters of all time. So I'd probably go Buck and Aikman, and then right behind them, I'm incredibly excited to see probably the best color college football analyst we've ever had in Kirk Herbstreit and the GOAT in broadcasting, Al Michaels, together for Thursday Night Football. And hopefully Thursday Night Football is not terrible games like they usually are. Let's get this broadcast booth some phenomenal football games. So I obviously – Buck and Aikman are the king of kings for me, and then I'd go Michaels and Herbstreit. But Tom Brady's the greatest football player of all time, so I'm sure as soon as he steps in that booth, he'll figure it out. Like, it'll be good.
Yeah, I think so. I think he'll be a natural, and I think he'll put in as much time, or comparatively speaking, he'll put in more time than most people when it comes to broadcasting, just like he does in his football career. I am a big I'm a Joe Buck. People love to hate on Joe Buck. It's almost like Nickelback, where you couldn't admit you like Nickelback. Now, the difference is Nickelback was actually pretty lousy. Joe Buck is actually talented. But, like, you can't, right? It just became a thing where everybody would just hate on. It became the thing to do. It was the cool thing. Hate on Joe Buck. Everybody hates on Joe Buck. I think the big thing for Buck, to me, honestly, was he would try to put in his personality. And he just had more fun in recent years, it seems. And he's doing more interviews now, and he doesn't take himself so seriously. And I think he even has a podcast, and he jokes around more often. But I always think back to, certainly as a Vikings fan, when Randy Moss did the fake moon to the Packers crowd because the Packers would always moon the Vikings bus after Moss scored a touchdown in the playoffs. And Buck, with those comments, and I think he has said since he regretted his reaction, but talking about, he said, it's like, that's the most despicable thing, right? Like, lighten up a little bit. I think that was the thing that always annoyed people with Buck. He was a little too, like, stuck up, for lack of a better term. He has started to loosen up, have a little more fun. I think when he injects his personality, that's where people get a little annoyed. But his actual, like, play-by-play broadcasting, I think it's top-notch. And Aikman I've always liked as well. I think Aikman does a great job. So I'm curious to see them on the Monday Night Booth. Al Michaels, as Trent said, I mean, he's one of the greats of all time. I'm intrigued to see his work, his match with Kirk Herbstreit on Thursday night. We've seen Kirk do a couple of NFL games the last couple of years, but that's a whole nother animal to do college football. Now he's going to know the guys that have come from some of these conferences in college football that he's broadcasted. He'll have a little bit of a head start. But that is, that even though it's still football, right, that's a big adjustment to go from college football to the NFL and know the NFL so well, to learn that entire league like the back of your hand. I think Brady will be a natural. I think Kevin Burkhardt does a really good job. I think they'll be good. I love Tirico. Tirico's one of my favorite broadcasters, and I've always been a Collinsworth guy. Collinsworth's another one that people love to hate on. Do you like Chris Collinsworth?
Love Chris Collinsworth. Me absolutely. Too. I mean, the Collinsworth slide is an all-timer. Yes. I hope they don't do it, though, because that was him and Al's thing. You know, I really hope there is no Collinsworth slide. But, yeah, it's Buck and Collinsworth. Everybody hates him. I think it's because they're voicing some of your, like, if you're a fan of that team, your worst moment or your best moment as a sports fan. And Collinsworth likes to put in his personality and everything, and he's a very chill and relaxed guy. So I do think people hate on him. I love both those guys.
Yeah, I like Collinsworth. I will say, if I'm being fair, I think Collinsworth has lost a little bit of his fastball in recent years, but I still really enjoy him. I think he's really good. I think he was even better a couple years ago, but I still am a big Collinsworth fan.
That's why I love Al Michaels, because it seems like he's still with it. And he's, 75 years old at this point.
Like,
he's been
that.
Broadcasting since the 60s. And now, you know, he's doing Thursday Night Football. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, he's 77. He looks good for 77.
Oh, great.
And by the way, he said he's never had a vegetable before. Something along those lines. Or he hasn't had one in 40 years. Something ridiculous about his diet. He doesn't eat vegetables. Let me Google it real quick.
Just steaks every day.
Yeah.
He's a big steakhouse guy, I'm sure.
He's the opposite of Sam Howell. And when I Google Al Michaels, the second photo that comes up is him in a tank top smoking a cigar inside in his home.
That's awesome.
Yeah, this guy. He's a boss. He's 77. Doesn't eat vegetables. He claims, I found the quote here, he claims he's never had a vegetable in his life.
I mean, good for him, I guess. He looks great. He's 77. He's still kicking. So there might be, he's a carnivore diet guy, I'm assuming.
That's crazy. 77, he's never had a vegetable. What do you eat as a side? I don't know. What do you do? Like rice? Potatoes?
Mac and cheese?
Ooh, that's a good side.
Yeah.
I went through a phase there. I was not eating a lot of vegetables. I've gotten back into the vegetable game. But 77 years without a vegetable. Last thing I'll say on all this, because I could talk about these broadcasters all day. Nance, if I was power ranking, and look, we don't know how Brady's going to be. I don't know how Kirk Herbstreit's going to be with Al Michaels. I assume good. They're both really good. They've just never worked together. And Herbstreit's done very little NFL, but I'm sure he'll be fine. I put Nance and Romo, I put them last. I've made it very clear over the years, ever since Romo started, people love Tony Romo. I never was a fan. I don't think he's good. And I'll tell you what, Nance, it's probably sacrilege for me to criticize Nance because he's like, one of the all-time greats. I think Tirico's better. I think Buck's better. I think Michaels is better. Maybe Nance is better than Burkhardt, but Burkhardt, don't sleep on him. He's underrated. He's good. Nance, I don't know. You know, like, he swoops in for March Madness, comes in, just does the Final Four in the championship. Pardon me, he does all of March Madness, I think. But he doesn't do any regular season basketball. Maybe he only does the Final Four. Does Jim Nance do any first-round games?
I don't know if it was the first round, but I feel like once the round of 16 got underway, if I'm not mistaken, him and Reggie Miller were together.
Okay, maybe he does do most of the tournament. But he doesn't do any regular season basketball. He just swoops. I think Ian Eagle's better. I think Kevin Harlan's better.
Whoa.
Yeah, and when it comes to football, I think Ian Eagle's very underrated. He's getting a little more pub, a little more run lately, especially now that they lost Marv Albert. The NBA, Marv Albert's gone, so now it's Harlan and Ian Eagle are the two top basketball broadcasters. I think Ian's underrated. Burkhardt's not on the same network, underrated. Anyways, point being, I know Nance has been the number one guy for all these years. I don't think he is the most talented play-by-play guy, and I also don't think he likes working with Romo. I don't think it's a good mix.
No, it's very evident that when they're doing a game, fourth quarter comes around, Tony's getting a little more loose as the game's going on. Nance seems incredibly frustrated with the Jim. I tell you what, Jim, this is getting close, Jim. This is a big play. Come on, man.
That's not bad. That's not a bad Romo. You just have to make more random noises. That's all he does, though. He just makes noises. He doesn't even say anything.
Whoa.
Michael sends a message. Says, Nance, Romo, yes. Buck Aikman, no. They ruined the game for me. Michael's Herbstreit, meh. Ah, I'm on the opposite side. Nance, Romo, I put last. Buck Aikman, I put towards the top. Love Al Michaels. Love Tirico. And I think Tom Brady will be a natural once he enters that booth, whenever that may be. Anyways, spent a lot more time talking about the broadcasters than I plan to, but I could talk about them all 3 hours. When we come back, a compliment paid towards the Gamecocks and some sleeper teams in college football. We'll get to that next. It's the Moore Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers. Lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Coming up, sleeper teams for college football this year. Get to that on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. When I say sleeper teams, I'm saying more big aspirations. I'm not going to give you a team that they may win 6 games this year and people are only expecting 2. I'm talking about teams that we should pay more attention to because they'll be some of the best teams in college football, or at least have the chance to. Let's run through this conference by conference. In the Pac-12, I really like Utah. Now, maybe they're not so much a sleeper. Maybe by the time we get to the start of the season, Utah will be getting a lot of attention. They'll probably be a ranked team to begin the year. I would imagine so. But they're a potential playoff team. If the Pac-12 were to get a playoff team, it could be Utah this year. Last year, Utah went 10-4. You probably remember that wild Rose Bowl against Ohio State where they held their own and they scored 45 points, which usually Utah, you don't think of like a high-flying offense. That was a heck of a game. That was one of the best games of the college football season. On New Year's Day against Ohio State. It was great. And they almost won. They hung right in there with Ohio State. Outside of that game, I mean, even if you want to include that game, all 4 losses for Utah last year were on the road and by single digits. And then you look at this year, in the Pac-12, that conference is always wide open. And while I do like USC, they do have a first-year head coach. Oregon is the other big-time program. They have a first-year head coach. Utah's Kyle Whittingham, who I think is going into his 15th year. And is a very underrated coach. Utah always plays well in bowl games. In fact, Whittingham has one of the best bowl records all time, and that's a sign of a good coach. He gets his guys ready to go. They're playing a team they never faced before. They got a month to prepare. He takes advantage of the extra time. His guys are always locked in. They almost beat Ohio State. So you got a good coach. You got an open conference. You got a team that was good last year. And they're bringing back their quarterback. They're bringing back their running back. They're bringing back 14 starters from last year. So I like Utah in the Pac-12. By the way, they start the year, I think it's their first game, they go to Florida. That's going to be very interesting in the first game. And if they lose, then that puts a little bit of a dent into my potential playoff sleeper, Utah. But I like Utah this year. There's somebody to keep an eye on that I told you yesterday. Right? The whole idea of this segment is because yesterday I said I think we're going to get new blood in the college football playoff. I think we get 2 new teams once again this year. So now, who can those teams be? Utah could be one of them. I'll also say out of the Pac-12, I'll include USC. because I think with Lincoln Riley, there's great potential there. I think Lincoln Riley does get USC back. My only concern is I don't know if it's year one, at least when we talk about a playoff team. I think they have a winning record this year. I think they win at least 8 games this year. Can they, you know, run the table and go to the playoff in year one? I don't know, but I think Lincoln Riley is going to get USC to that point. Give them a couple years, and they'll be back towards the top of the sport. I really believe so. Now, they play Utah in the middle of the season, and it's at Utah. That should be a wild game. It'll probably be the game of the year in the Pac-12. And it may be the game that decides which team is going to potentially come out of the Pac-12. But I think those are the two best teams. Those two teams, I like Utah more just because of the experience and the fact that Whittingham's been there so long, quarterback's coming back. USC, it's a new staff. You brought in a quarterback. You brought in a bunch of transfers. You're going to try to gel first year on the fly. It just may not work the first year. In the Big 12, I mean, Baylor, right? I'm not going out on a big limb here. Baylor was really good last year. Can they take that step forward this year? I'm a big Dave Aranda fan as well, just like Kyle Whittingham. I think Dave Aranda is another really good coach that maybe doesn't get a lot of attention. And last season, they were really good defensively. They set a school record with 12 wins. They won the Big 12. They had 5 wins against ranked opponents. They won a New Year's Day bowl game for the first time since the 50s. And they're bringing back their entire offensive line and some good weapons on offense. And they'll have some experience at the quarterback position. And the Big 12 seems to be wide open. I have some concerns about Brent Venables in his first year at Oklahoma. I think Baylor's the team to beat in the Big 12. So, again, if we're going to get a playoff team out of the Big 12, could be Baylor. So when we're talking about new blood in the college football playoff, maybe it's Baylor out of the Big 12. In the ACC, I've talked myself into this because I have never been a big NC State fan, and NC State has always been, I don't know, I can't get a grasp on them the last couple of years. To me, they've overachieved, but the last 2 years, right, they keep winning 9 games, and this year they're bringing back just about everybody. Coaches are coming back. We did this exercise a few weeks ago. I always reference it, but NC State checks the most boxes for continuity in the ACC. They're the only school that checks all 3 boxes. Quarterback's coming back, head coach coming back, entire coaching staff coming back. In fact, over 70% of their production on defense is coming back, and that was kind of their calling card last year. They beat Clemson last year. They won 9 games. I don't know if the ACC gets a playoff team this year that's not a Clemson or maybe a Miami, some sort of big brand, but NC State, I do think, is a team to watch for in the ACC. We're going to focus on Clemson, but in that same division, right, we may focus on, can Pitt follow up last year? Can Wake Forest follow up last year? In that sense, maybe we sleep a little bit on NC State, that they continue to climb, you know, take another step forward. I think they finished in second last year, right? Maybe they finish in first. That's not a far reach. Also, I am very intrigued by Miami. I put Miami in this list. But they're in the same boat as USC. I don't think Cristobal can do it his first year. But we know that the Coastal Chaos, that division is always wide open. We get a different winner every year. Miami last year, didn't they finish in second? They finished in the top 3. They still fired their coach. They still had a disappointing year. That division's wide open. I think Cristobal could get them in the ACC title game. Could they have a good enough resume to be a playoff team? Maybe. Give them a couple of years. I don't know about year one, but just like Lincoln Riley, within the next probably 3 years, I think USC and I think Miami are both in that top tier in college football once again. That's how much I like those moves. That's how much I trust Lincoln Riley and Mario Cristobal. In the SEC, I'll give you 2 sleepers. Now, a potential playoff sleeper, I'll say Arkansas. Talked about them earlier. If it's not going to be an Alabama, if it's not going to be a Georgia, or if it's going to be a second team with one of those, realistically, I think Arkansas is the best chance to make the playoffs. I ran through their case earlier. But otherwise, in terms of sleepers that may not be playoff teams in the SEC, I also don't know if they're technically sleepers, but I would say Tennessee. I'm big on Tennessee. I think Tennessee will be the second best team behind Georgia. And I think if everything clicks for Tennessee, earlier I gave you the floor and the ceiling for these teams. I think Tennessee, if everything clicks, if they have a really good year, maybe even could get to 10 wins. Now, I'm not telling you Tennessee is going to be a playoff team this year, but I think they're a team that could be better in the SEC than people believe right now. They could be the 3rd best team in the SEC this year. That's how much I like Tennessee. On the other side, in the other division, I mean, I guess Ole Miss would be the pick of a sleeper team. Ole Miss or Arkansas. Teams that potentially could be a second playoff team out of the SEC and potentially could be right there challenging with Alabama. I'm a little down on Ole Miss, but I think Ole Miss, if I were to look at the rest of that division, I think Ole Miss does have a higher ceiling than a Texas A&M or an LSU. Certainly Mississippi State. So if everything clicks for Ole Miss, then they could potentially maybe win 10 games, be the third best team in that conference. I don't know if it's good enough for a playoff spot. But when I look at the SEC, we focus so much on the SEC. We talk about the SEC so much. The SEC is so interesting that I'm giving you two categories. For a playoff sleeper, Arkansas. For just a general sleeper, Tennessee. And then I guess I'd also say Ole Miss as two teams that could potentially be the second or third best team in the SEC this year that maybe are not getting enough love. Last conference is the Big Ten. If I had to choose a team in the Big Ten, look, Michigan State may be that team that after what they did last year, can they take a step forward and be a playoff team this year? Potentially. We're always waiting on Penn State. They had such a disappointing finish to last year. Can James Franklin finally break through? I'm actually going to go. And even though I'm a Vikings fan, I'm not from Minnesota. I'm not a Golden Gopher fan, so I'm not a homer here. I'm going to say Minnesota as a sleeper, just a general sleeper in the Big Ten. I like P.J. Fleck, and I like what he's been doing at Minnesota. And last year, they finished the season really strong, and they went off, and they played really well in their bowl game and won a bowl game. If I'm looking at the Big Ten, look, I think it comes down to – I think Ohio State obviously is the team to beat. I think Michigan takes a step back. Michigan State, I have some concern over. I don't know if they can duplicate last year's success. Penn State, I think, is a little fraudulent. I don't really trust James Franklin. Iowa is always there in the conversation, but Iowa has a limit to themselves. We saw it again last year. Like, there's a ceiling to it. Iowa can't keep up, kind of like the Big Ten in the NCAA tournament. They just don't get the athletes to compete. They're a well-coached team. They win a bunch of games. They play well in the Big Ten. Iowa and Wisconsin, two teams that do well in the Big Ten. Then you go up against some of the big boys, and you can't really match up. So if I had to pick a team in the Big Ten that could step up and surprise you, I think the Big Ten's a little wide open behind Ohio State. And I think Minnesota, they're not going to be a playoff team, but I think Minnesota could have a good year in the Big Ten once again this year. Some teams that I kind of combine two topics, sleepers and playoff sleepers as well from each conference. When we come back, we'll get to Trent's takes. We do it this time, around this time, each and every day, and we'll do it next. It's the Morrow Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Plenty of college football talk throughout the afternoon. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. Around this time every day, we find out what's on the mind of the producer with Trent's takes.
What's on the mind of the Morrow Midday Show producer?
Draft Luke Morrow.
That's Panther. Right.
It's time for Trent's Takes.
The radio cowboy will be coming, and he's coming soon, folks. Luke, just a quick side note here on Get Up this morning. One of my favorite players of all time in the NBA, Amari Stoudemire, was in studio with Mike Greenberg breaking down some of his best dunks and breaking down the NBA season. I absolutely love Stoudemire on the television. I know he was working with the Brooklyn Nets, I believe, for a little bit, and Greeny even asked him on air, like, are you still working with them? What's going on? And he had left the Brooklyn Nets after this season, I'm sure. And with the speech from the GM yesterday, the Brooklyn Nets seem like they're in a little bit of disarray. Yeah. But Amari Stoudemire wasn't talking about them too kindly, but I absolutely love him as a personality on Get Up. I think he's going to do great work. I loved watching him play when he was wearing the goggles and everything, him and Steve. It was awesome. Awesome.
Yeah, he was so fun to watch back in the day. I always think, when I think of Stoudemire, I think back to he had to go through the eye issues, which led to the goggles. He got poked in the eye, and it, like, partially torn his iris.
Right.
That's how you pronounce it. Anyways, in order to fix this whole thing, the story was he said he had to lay on a table for about 22 hours a day for 10 straight days so they could work on his eyes. Brutal. So that's what I always think of when I think of Stoudemire. But he was such a fun player to watch and apparently pretty good breaking it down in the media as well.
Yeah, he's very calm, cool, and collective. But that's just why I love him, because on the court he was an absolute menace to society. He was such a high flyer. Absolutely loved the guy. Luke, yesterday the Twitterverse was up in arms, very excited, because the Dallas Cowboys are going to Lambeau Field in Week 10 to take on the Green Bay Packers. Look, I know a lot of people are saying this is Mike McCarthy's revenge game. He's going to go back and show why Aaron Rodgers should have never wanted him out. Last 10 years, Luke, I believe the Packers are 6-1 against the Dallas Cowboys. Bug on the windshield type thing. Sorry, not sorry, but I'm excited for this game. There's no doubt about it. By the way, Dez Bryant did not catch that ball a couple years back, just letting everybody know. And two, I mean, this is good for the NFL that we are getting these kind of games that people actually genuinely want to tune into. And I'm hoping it's going to be, you know, the 425 game on Fox or CBS or one of these. But it's going to be a cool game nonetheless to see Mike McCarthy go back to Green Bay. But we, as Packers fans, Luke, have absolutely moved on from the Mike McCarthy era. It's LaFleur's team, all right? And we know that. It's A-Rod's team. I have zero concerns, zero worries about the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, what are we even talking about here, Luke?
I'm sure Rodgers will have to stick it to him. And LaFleur probably doesn't care, but there's a little bit of that, like, former, almost like a former girlfriend showing up, or former boyfriend, right, whatever, former girlfriend showing up to you at your deal with you and your new relationship.
Yeah.
And you want to make sure, like, he's better off with me, right? So LaFleur, I don't think he really cares, but there's a little bit of that dynamic to it as well, that, like, hey, Mike, right, Rodgers is better with me.
Right.
You're not going to come in here and try to prove us wrong. But it will certainly, by the time we get to that week, it's going to be talked about all week. It's going to be built up. It's going to be a big deal. We'll find out more about the schedule, of course, tonight. But that's one of the more intriguing matchups on paper this year, just because of that little rivalry or revenge factor.
Yeah, no doubt about it. My prediction, 35-10, won't be close. Sorry, not sorry. Yeah, Luke, you're right. It's like when you're at the bar with your new gal or guy, whatever, and your ex walks in, and then everybody gets a little tense. Everybody gets a little tense. You start looking around. You're making sure you're looking right and everything. Matt LaFleur is going to do just fine against Mike McCarthy, but I do appreciate everything Mike McCarthy did for the Green Bay Packers bringing a Super Bowl. Greatly appreciate it. Now, Luke, a video was posted either yesterday or the day before from the Miami Dolphins social media team, and it was a video of Tua Tagovailoa taking a play action snap and throwing it down the field to Tyreek Hill. Now, the throw in the beginning of the video looked incredible. It looked like it was spinning right off of his hand. And then it looked, you know, as the video was ending, like Tyreek Hill was catching a punt. It was not a good throw whatsoever. Now, I don't know if you remember last year when the Baltimore Ravens put out a video of Lamar Jackson throwing to Sammy Watkins, and they were saying, like, new connection. It looked like a punt. It was a very, very bad ball. So this is just a PSA to the social media teams of the NFL. Hey, let's put out the good throws, because all the replies under that video were just, you know, crushing Tua. And I do feel bad for Tua. He's had 6 offensive coordinators in 6 years. Miami Dolphins are, you know, they have their own problems in itself. Personally, I believe when he was drafted coming off that hip injury, he really should have sat that entire year. Ryan Fitzpatrick, that should have been his team, and then moved him into it. I do love the connection. I mean, you got to think about this Miami Dolphins offense. You got Mike McDaniel, who seems like a super genius running the offense, but you also have two of the fastest guys in the NFL, that being Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle. The question now is, can Tua get them the ball? That's the only, because these guys are going to get open. We know that they can get open. We've seen that they can get open. But can Tua get them the ball? And I think that's Miami Dolphins fans' concern going forward. And that video didn't help anything when it comes to Tua going forward, Luke.
Now, certainly, you ever do something that you think is going to go over well and then it blows up in your face? Mm. Like, that's these teams. They think, like, this is really impressive. This is going to make us look great. And they post it on social media, and it doesn't look so good. It's like in The Office when Dwight goes out with Craig Robinson's character and Daryl.
And
they do the fire in the hole. All right. And, like, you think it's really funny, fire in the hole, you throw the drink back in the drive-thru. And then in this case, Dwight does it and thinks it's great. And Daryl was like, that's not funny. Like, what are you doing? Similar idea. Like, they post this thing, like, everyone's going to love this. This is going to be great. And people are like, are you kidding? This looks terrible. He underthrew Tyreek and it was a wobbly pass. That was the case here. About an hour from now, we'll probably do quarterbacks with the most pressure on them. But to tip my hand, I don't know if anybody has more pressure on them than Tua, because you got all the pieces around him, and they're just looking to replace you. If you don't get the job done this year, Tua better have a good year. But based off of that video from yesterday, not a great start for him trying to throw it to Tyreek downfield.
No, and you know, speaking of that, Luke, I know you get to it later, but those two, the two quarterbacks we talked about yesterday, Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson, that pressure is immense for them because all these ESPN pundits, Dan Orlovsky, going on there talking about them, saying that they're going to be as good as Patrick Mahomes. What are we doing here? Let's not do this, okay? Let's not put the pressure on these 23, 24-year-olds that are still trying to make it in the NFL. On paper, the Jags, he probably should be better. But Christian Kirk and Zay Jones, I don't look at that roster, Luke, and correct me if I'm wrong, that's a Super Bowl winning team. I don't understand the allure behind the Jacksonville Jaguars and everybody talking about Trevor Lawrence is going to have this massive year. Christian Kirk was wide receiver 3 in Arizona. Yeah. I mean, he was in the slot. Zay Jones was 3-4. He was the fourth option for the Raiders, and now they're 1-2, and it's automatic. Like, they're going to run the table. They can beat the Colts. They can beat the Titans in their division. What are we even talking about, Luke? That's unbelievable.
Yeah, the Jaguars will be bad again. For the Jets, that's the problem with having a good offseason, though. People get excited. Oh, they had the best draft. Look at these moves they're making. That it builds up this the expectations, I guess, for Zach Wilson and the Jets. When really, I think New York's still a long way. I don't think they'll be very good this year. But because they're one of the most exciting teams of the offseason, we're going to increase the expectations and expect more out of Zach Wilson this year, which probably the expectations for Zach Wilson will probably be unfair by the time the season starts because we're talking ourselves into the Jets this whole offseason.
Yeah, I mean, and look, Luke, if the Jets win 6 games next year, I think that's a win for them. If the Jags win 5 games next year, I think that's a win for them. These are not playoff teams. We know who the playoff teams are going to be every single year. I guess last year the anomaly was the Bengals. They ended up going to the Super Bowl. But I don't think there's a Bengals team. Everybody's looking for that Bengals team coming up this season. Who's the team that had a horrible last couple years that'll rise up? They don't have Joe Burrow on that roster. They don't have Ja'Marr Chase, who is looking like they're going to be a top 3 duo, a 1-2 punch that the NFL hasn't seen in quite some time outside of A-Rod and Devontae Adams, Tom Brady, Randy Moss. I feel like they're going to transition into that realm, but I don't see any of these teams, especially the Bears, going anywhere with these second-year quarterbacks. There won't be one. There won't be a Joe Burrow and the Bengals coming this season.
Yeah, I would agree. I'm just trying to run through them. The only thing, I guess, is if Trey – I don't think Trey Lance is good enough. Maybe the team's good enough around them.
That'd be the only one, right? Yeah. Because the team is so good, the defense is so good, they have the pieces. Like, that would be the one. All right, if he makes it. But they're not – they weren't bad last year. Like, they went to the playoffs.
Right. That's true. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Mac Jones, the other one, they made it to the playoffs. Yeah, you're right. Of the other guys, I don't see any of them taking that big step forward. Justin Fields, Davis Mills, Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson. Yeah, I think all of those teams will be bad once again.
Yeah, no doubt. And, Luke, last thing here. When you see Giannis Antetokounmpo have a performance like he did last night, it is, like, I always think about it, who's the best player in the world, right? That's always the topic of discussion. When he goes for 40 points and 11 rebounds while he's, you know, bleeding out of his eye and just absolutely dominating performance, it's very difficult for a guy his size and stature and with his, you know, abilities on the court to say that he isn't the best player on the planet. Like, it's very, very difficult for me to say, all right, who's better than him right now when he has a game like that? I can't see it right now, Luke.
That's fair. I think he's still a little too limited offensively.
Okay.
I mean, that'd be the big knock. I mean, we have to split hairs because when you're talking about, you know, the best of the best, you have to zero in on everything. But yeah, I mean, look, he won a championship last year, and now I imagine they're going to win this series after last night, so he's going to get back to the Eastern Conference Finals. He's doing it without Middleton. He's scoring over 30 points a game. He's playing great. There's not much I can say to criticize. Even last night when he missed a big foul shot, one of his teammates got the rebound and put it back. So what was originally a negative turned into a positive result. So, yeah, there's not much I could say negatively about Giannis. If we were doing like a fantasy draft where you were starting your team with anyone in the league, I don't know if I'd go Giannis 1. He'd obviously be towards the top of the list. But he's certainly in the conversation right now the way he's playing. I can't take it. He won the championship last year. They may get back there this year. No one else can say that right now. So I'd be nitpicking, I guess, in my critique of Giannis. He's playing great right now. Because of that win last night, I'll be kind, and I won't I won't continue to nitpick. I'll just say, yes, Giannis is playing great, and the Bucks now one win closer to moving on.
Just multiple MVPs, and now he's got the championship. It's just so – I know he doesn't have the 3. I mean, he can hit it – you know, he can hit perimeter shots if he needs to. But I know he doesn't have the jumper, but he's just so dominant. You know, when he's coming down the floor, nobody wants to get in his way if he's, you know, got a running start at half court going into the lane. Just nobody's going to get in his way.
No, that's true. I was talking about this with my brothers yesterday. This is the first time we've had four straight MVPs in the NBA from international players. And I also think this has to be the first time the top three vote-getters in 1 year were all international players as well.
Crazy.
So, yeah, it's interesting, right? The NBA, we're moving in this direction where the international talent, Luka Doncic is another one who wasn't top three in voting but is so good. The international players that are coming into the NBA are becoming the best players in the league. They're so good. They're very talented. And you think back to 30 years ago, they showed it in The Last Dance where Tony Kukoc was the guy coming over, and he was just kind of like a role player. Now they're the best players in the league, the guys that come from other countries to play in the NBA. Giannis is one of them. We'll wrap up hour two when we come back. It's the More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
There's a freeway running through the yard, and I'm a bad boy, cause I don't even miss her. I'm a bad boy for breaking her heart.
Wrapping up hour two of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. I just saw this come across online. Rich Strike, after surprising everybody and winning the Kentucky Derby on Saturday, they announced that the horse will not participate in the Preakness Stakes and instead will focus on the Belmont Stakes. So there goes any chance at a Triple Crown this year. They must know how unlikely it was Saturday that he's not going to. So there's no Triple Crown. But let me tell you, people these days, they get a little taste of success, and they don't want to compete anymore. They want to take the easy road now. They want to kick their feet up and relax. Rich Strike, you get back out there. You win one Kentucky Derby, now he thinks he doesn't have to race in the Preakness Stakes. What's going on here? So no chance at a Triple Crown this year. Rich Strike, he's going on strike. He's going to take a little time off. Get ready for the Belmont instead. So there goes the fun of that. Now nobody will really, fewer people will care about the Preakness Stakes now. Coming up, takeaways from last night's playoff action. Get to quarterbacks under the most pressure this year. We'll talk with a member of the Charleston Battery. And golf continues to kind of embarrass themselves. Hour three next. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.